previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
So how's your day?
Business as usual.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 8, Toil and Trouble. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. And listening public, rumors of our death, not exaggerated. Here we go.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, let's just get into it. Starting with our D plot, there's no sugarcoating it. Kelly and Brandon fuck in public. They do, okay? That's what happens. Don't blame us. We didn't write it. I mean, I wrote that, but other than that. So, go ahead.
Okay, no.
Kelly. Kelly points out to Brandon that he is very predictable in his morning ablutions, and he says he doesn't mind a little good old-fashioned routine after the fall they've had. She doesn't either, but she wouldn't mind shaking things up because it's not just the shower, it's everything. Like, what if they only get along because they're both boring slash safe? Do you get along? Question mark. Anyway, she thinks they should act like 22-year-olds and not make so many vanilla choices. I'm paraphrasing. So Brandon's solution to Kelly's indirect request that he go down on her once in a while, or so I read it, is to make her a fancy dinner with phone help from Cindy. Look! Sarah! Come on!
It sucks.
Or does it? Anyway, so...
Oh, God.
Look.
No,
he makes
go ahead.
Fancy
I'll just be over here digging a grave and climbing into it.
Anyway, makes her a fancy dinner. Cindy talks him through it on the phone, although we don't see that part, of course. There's even champagne, and they have two bites and then start making out and then sweep all of Jim and Cindy's dishes off the table so they can fuck on it, which is A, unhygienic, and B, really inconsiderate of property that's not theirs, and not just the dishes, but also the table. Just saying. That's a common area in a shared home.
Yeah, I just, well, yeah. And that comes up later, too, as it were.
Right. Well, yes, to make matters worse.
I just feel like this is one of those things that they only do on TV because someone else is going to clean it up. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. Like, you do this once sort of as an adult, that you're like, oh, I saw people do this on TV. I'll just swoosh everything off the desk. And but then it's your desk and then everything's on the floor.
Yep. Who's
like
gonna
the
pick
phone
that up?
Is making that beeping noise. Kids ask your parents. I mean, you know, no.
No,
just
true.
Go to bed.
I mean,
who
I was
cares?
Thinking this. I recently rewatched Whip It for like the 500th time, which it's a movie that I love. But there's a big food fight scene in that movie. And that's what I always think every time there's a food fight. Like, the only person who would ever write something like this as a hilarious, fun, like bonding experience or a joke is like a man. I mean, a man didn't write this one, so I don't know what happened here. But like, in general, that's what I assume. Like, no one who has ever cleaned up a lot of food would think that that was not stressful to do or watch, which I always am stressed out by it.
Yeah. See, also incorporating food into one's lovemaking. Like, no. It's just way too much cleanup, and it's a waste of perfectly good Cool Whip. But I have said way too much.
To make matters worse on the show, not our lives, we then have to see Brandon and Kelly being smug as hell about all the fucking that they did in the aforementioned common area of the house they share with others and then didn't clean up so that Steve would be forced to ask them about it and disbelieve the truth because Kelly and Brandon are so boring. And he much more readily believes that the neighbor's dog busted in and ransacked the place. Not unreasonable. Kelly then calls Brandon at work because she's still horny from the night before. He is also. They are to meet at home for more fucking. Finally, We have to see Kelly and Brandon grossing out fellow elevator riders with their PDA. And then when everyone else has left the elevators, they slide back into fucking it, I guess. End of storyline, except to say in our shared doc, I have marked here in brackets, no clips. Also, my eyes melted and I'm an asexual now. The end of our D plot. I hate them.
Yeah. You can also assume that there is an incorrect half updo on the part of Kelly, who has a bob haircut. Learn to live with your fucking choices, mom. And B, so much baby voicing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's really bad. There will be, I regret to inform you, in the visual aids, several photos of Brandon seriously clamping his entire lower jaw over her face from chin to mid nose. I don't understand why his co-stars don't make him stop doing that. Start carrying a pin and stab him. Why?
On to our C plot, in which Donna deals with seance stuff. So Donna has a meeting with a potential new client named Mrs. Garibaldi. And because she shit the bed with all the clients that Val stole, she needs it to go well. This is, according to Donna, the widow of a certain Morton Garibaldi, which, what is with this name? Dom DeLuise was Magic Morton. Anyway, this Morton, who's dead, was a gown designer, and Donna would do anything to work in a design house like Garibaldi's and thinks this is her in. So when we meet Mrs. G, she likes bright, bold colors, and Donna has brought her sketches. Like, this is something personal shoppers do, bring clothes other people have already made. Idiot. I'm starting to get why you don't have any clients anymore, but whatever.
Yeah. Also, her sketches are disastrous.
Yeah, you can see those in the visual aids too. And Mrs. G is on my level in clip two.
Oh, you draw?
I design. I have some ideas for evening wear that I think you might like.
Pretty. Wonderfully loud. And I like this one. Oh, they're lovely, really. You have a lot of talent, dear. And in the future, I may have you whip up a gown or two. But right now, I need something for Friday.
As in later this week.
Well, I'm having a seance and it needs to be something I can sit in.
Because you'll be sitting on the floor.
Comfortable, but not comfortable looking.
I still want to make a statement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything you worth wearing is should be sit on the floorable, in my opinion.
Agree.
But also Donna's like, is in this Friday? Like, yeah, you know what's not hard to find in Los Angeles? Loud ass caftans, just saying. But anyway, there's also some business about Mrs. G hiding all her jewelry in the house because she doesn't trust banks, because she's hidden it too well. She's misplaced a diamond bracelet and wants the psychic to contact her dead husband so he can tell her where it is. But she also needs a referral on a psychic.
It's up my butt.
Well played, Dave.
And like, look, I don't want to throw everyone I know in Los Angeles under the bus, but some of them do have like psychics that they go to. And like, I don't know why it would occur to Mrs. Garibaldi to have a seance if she didn't already have a psychic in mind. Like,
yeah,
now Donna has
she
to source
trusted
this too?
To contact her husband and tell her where the jewelry is stashed in the presence of the psychic. Like,
right.
Eh? And then it takes Donna seriously like 3 days on the phone to find a psychic in L.A., just make Steve do it. Get him a turban. I wish we'd seen that, honestly.
Seriously. So some vaguely goth broad then has shown up at the Beat office to ask about placing an ad for her services as a witch. And Steve cracks up but stops when she doesn't. She says she specializes in love potions and casting carnal spells. And Steve declines a free sample but will call her later with rates for the ad. And when she leaves, Brandon marvels that Steve ignored her proposition, which Steve denied it even was. There's really no other place to put this, so that's why I put this here. But seriously, what is Brandon's position? Clip three.
She's really gotten to you, hasn't she?
The witch?
No, not the witch. Carly.
No.
Oh, yes?
No.
Oh, yes, my friend. Opportunity was knocking, and you didn't even get up off the lazy boy to answer the door. You should be ashamed of yourself.
So should you. Give that mess back to David and apologize.
Yeah, his whole storyline in this episode is like a glorification of you know, being horny for the person that you've in a long-term relationship with. So why is he acting like Steve has let down men by not horning out all over this woman that he just met 10 seconds ago when he's seeing Carly? What? Whatever. That scene's other purpose was so that when Donna still hasn't found a psychic the day of the seance, seriously, she is so bad at everything, Steve can recommend this witch broad, and then it's a seance, which is happening during the day, which not the time. Also, the only people there are Mrs. G, Donna, and the witch, so I don't know why she needed a special outfit, but fine. None of the places that Dead Morton has supposedly sent Donna to search for the bracelet has panned out. And the next one is the pool. Mrs. G thinks that's ridiculous, and Donna obviously doesn't want to go search for it there, so she's just come out of, like, the chimney. So Donna asks if Mrs. G remembers the last time she wore the bracelet, and she does. It was her niece's wedding. The bracelet clasp broke, and Donna guesses put it in her purse, and Mrs. G confirms that she did, and guesses Mortimer must have forgotten about the wedding, and Donna's like, don't you mean Morton? And Mrs. G is like, I think I know my dead husband's name, because he wasn't in fashion. Oh, wait, he was. He had a chain of dry cleaners. Wow. Sarah is dead of disgust. There is more to the episode, but
first, we have a message for Bojana. Bojana's friend Elise, who informs us that she quoted us in a toast at Bojana's wedding. So we really were there in spirit, and many congratulations, / I hope we weren't cited on the subject of Brandon on an otherwise happy day. Elise let us know that Bojana's having a birthday and that Bojana is an artist and activist for people living with disabilities.
Naturally, that got us thinking of the myriad ways in which adding Bojana to the cast would have upgraded the show and our lives, but we've confined ourselves to the top 5 improvements a Bojana Walsh would have made to Beverly Hills 90210.
At number 1, Bojana's Peach Pit After Dark mural wouldn't have seared our cornei, and her canvases wouldn't have had us making Jackson Pollock jokes.
Oh boy. Number 2, if Bojana had been helping out with the float, we might have actually been concerned about Emily Valentine burning it down instead of eager for her to get on with it.
Number 3, Bojana would have had a plan for getting Cousin Bobby into that party stairs-free, or at least not made it super awkward by bringing every conversation back to his wheelchair.
Honestly. Number 4, she would not confuse contriving a way for a dumb baby who got caught wasted at prom to graduate with her class undeservingly and real activism because she is not a sawed-off asshat in an overdyed jean jacket. And finally,
number 5, having already understood from working in the fashion industry that sweatshops exist, she would try to address the situation with, at minimum, a brassiere and some rudimentary Spanish.
Well, I think we've all learned a very important lesson about wishing Bojana a
happy birthday!
On to the B plot. No one has good time at a fancy banquet. So after some customer server flirting, to wit, clip 4.
Has anyone ever told you you're very high maintenance?
Thanks.
Yeah, like one of the few charming episodes in it, moments in an episode that was a trial.
Oh boy, such a trial, perfect word. Steve then invites Carly to a harvest ball thing that Kelly's foundation is throwing. Elsewhere, Cooper brings Val to lunch at some stiff Richie joint to talk about pheasants, and he felt guilty about his family money, so it was important to him that he make his own. There's also talk about her hustle and some oblique suggestions about her not having fucked him yet, I guess so that we don't think she's a tramp for sleeping with both him and Noah, which who cares? I mean, that's how I interpreted it. Yeah. Anyway, Cooper also invites her to the Harvest Ball. She's not sure since all her friends are going to be there, but he thinks that's great since he would love to meet them. Ron Howard narrator, he wouldn't. Her face falls and he jokes about her hiding him for some reason, but she says she's just not ready for him to meet her friends and basically overrules. He basically overrules her uncertainty and then places a box in front of her that contains a diamond necklace. For once on the show, it's actually not especially tacky, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine, which for this show is really something. So, yeah, well done.
No, She finally agrees to go to the ball with him. So remember how Noah is a secret swell? We get reminded because some bald dude named Albert is on Noah's boat talking about his portfolio while he drinks wine out of the bottle. Noah doesn't care about any of that, tells the guy to do whatever he thinks he should because the money's only ever caused problems for himself and everyone he knows. And Albert's like, this isn't about Beth, but they can't get into it because then Val comes in and Albert leaves, Noah lying that he's someone who wants Noah to work on his boat. And Val then sneers at Noah's meal of mac and cheese, which he is eating out of the pot. Get the knack, Val. That's the best shit. Also, the most efficient way to eat it.
Seriously. Don't make disgusted. Another dish. Jeez.
Honestly. She's also disgusted that he doesn't have a clean glass for her to drink wine out of. Get over yourself, Val. When they show up at the Walsh house the next day, we are reminded when Val gets a page that Noah still thinks that her big client, Cooper Hargrove, is some old dude. And then when she goes upstairs to call him, I have JT. Who is that? No, Kelly. Sorry, bad abbreviation. Kelly invites Noah to the Harvest Ball. Val didn't say anything about this event to him, and Kelly makes a big face, which you can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. Upstairs, Noah asks Val why she didn't invite him, and Val flirts that a formal party is not his thing. He agrees that it's not. She says she may go since a client gave her a ticket as a tip, and he cracks that he doesn't even take them out to dinner, and she says he makes up for it in other areas. Her areas.
I don't get it.
Then Carly is over at Donna's to borrow a gown, of which Donna, of course, has many. We learn that Carly went to the University of Montana, but only for a year because she got knocked up. She never really finished because she didn't know what she wanted to do for a living. Just a little backstory on Carly. Oh, God. So then Steve in his creative black tie, which I am sorry to say you can see in the visual aids. Do not.
No.
Don't do. Do not do.
It's like a show it's up. It's like a porno, but I expected there to be like a white tiger involved. It's just really, it looks like a tearaway. It's so gobble and it's terrible.
It's really bad. Anyway, they show up to get Carly for the ball, and he's impressed with her look and suggests that they just hang out there for a friendly G-rated conversation because Zach is also present. But Carly wants to go to the ball, and Zach is sleeping over at Carly's mom's, but Carly warns Steve not to make that more than it is. And then Val goes to the boat to show Noah her ball look and leave, I guess. She says she'd rather be with him tonight, but he's not really a black tie type of guy. We hear again. He wants to know if he's in this for the long run. And he essentially says, yes, no one cares. She will see him tomorrow. Everyone is then stunned to see Val at the ball and dancing with someone that only Kelly can identify as Cooper Hargrove, presumably because he's a big benefactor of the Foundation, I suppose. But Brandon recognizes the name as belonging to one of Val's clients. And Kelly is shitty about Val mixing business with pleasure, of course. And then Donna is entering the ball in time to run into Noah, who got a ticket from his friend Albert. He wanted to surprise Val. Mm. And in the ballroom, Carly has to take off because Zach's been puking. Steve goes after her to ask what she's doing. She was going to get a cab because the tickets were expensive and one of them should stay and enjoy it. But it won't be fun for Steve without her. Good Steve. That's the correct move. And then in non-correct storylines, Noah surprises Val as she's weirdly standing in the middle of the dance floor, and she gets all flustered because Cooper's on his way back with their drinks, and the two alpha males in Val's life have to glare at each other, and we have to watch because we're in hell, clip 5.
Look, Val, something I want to talk to you about.
Here's the bubbly you requested. Cooper Hargrove.
Yeah, I heard a lot about you. You look great for 80 years old. It's a great necklace you got there, Val. Must have cost you a lot.
Who's he?
No one.
Certainly looks like someone. Major someone.
Look, he's nobody, all right?
I saw him kiss your shoulder.
Look, it's not how it looked. Let's just go dance, all right?
No, it's not all right. I didn't get to be successful by settling for second place, and I'm not about to start now. So goodbye.
But you're leaving?
Yeah, afraid so.
Look, you're taking this all wrong.
I wish I could believe that.
I mean, cheers to Hargrove for not dragging it out and being like, all right, bye. But also, his line delivery in this scene makes me think that he's going after Noah to see what he can do in that regard.
Yeah, I can see that. But
sure.
Yeah, you're right.
Submit your slash concepts for this scene and to us on our forums at previously.tv. Oh my God, who cares?
I mean, maybe the solution to Val's problems is she doesn't have to choose. Everyone can fuck Val at the same time and each other.
True. I mean, her boobs are looking really great once again. So, mm-hmm. You know what, folks? You two talk amongst yourselves. I'll cut it.
So Steve and Carly then get schmoopy at her house about Carly having to subsume her desires and plans for Zax, and Steve getting that, and then shit actually gets pretty real in clip six.
I love him more than anything.
I love you for feeling that way.
That's a big move for Steve.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think he's gonna love how they're both gonna be feeling in about 12 hours when Zach's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and over it, and they've come down with whatever ick he got at daycare. Good luck to you all.
Finally, our A plot, and honestly the only one I cared a tiny bit about, and only because it enraged me. David's financial idiocy finally catches up with him. So David has brought his bill to the LA phone center to pay it in person, but it's too late. It's too late. The service has been disconnected, and reconnecting it is an additional $25, which he says is fine because he has no choice. But then learns his total is $89.42, and the clerk is totally delighted to tell David that the credit card he just handed over has been rejected. And the next one, David gives him craps out too. He hands over the third as he looks over his shoulder and sees Donna getting out of the car. So lucky for him, that one works and he doesn't have to clue her in on his failure and insolvency yet. And then David is doing some kind of paperwork at the bar instead of his office when a woman comes in. She introduces herself as Jill Abernathy, as in J.C. Abernathy, and David makes a stupid face of confusion. So she laughs and says that she is his landlord. She has come in person because the rent is 2 weeks late for the fourth consecutive month. She wants a check tomorrow morning or he's out. And he says she can't do that. And she's like, read your lease, which by the way is up next month. And this is his hilarious response. Clip 7.
I'm a good tenant. I just happen to be going through a bit of a dry spell right now.
Then you'd better pray for rain, because the new lease will reflect a 15% increase in my property insurance tomorrow morning.
You're not a good tenant.
No.
You've been late 4 months in a row. You're a bad tenant.
Yeah, you're fucking terrible. And your neighbor's just as bad because he's still giving away burgers for free. So both of you. No, you're bad at this.
Right. And also, like, have you been doing this for 4 months? I thought Val sold to him at, like, toward the end of last season. So, I mean, by my math, he's been in arrears every month. He's been actually owning the club.
Yeah. And here's a tip. Even if you think you actually are a good tenant, like you're not, but don't give your landlord tone when she's come to tell you you're on probation and you have to, you know, like she's just laid out the terms. Your move is not to be yourself, David.
Yeah. It's to say thank you and then figure your shit out. But guess what he doesn't do? So Donna's cleavage is fucking nuts as she nags David about prep for the harvest ball. And
it really is.
He tries to put her off because he is broke, but he can't admit it. So then David and his 15 maxed out credit cards think the way out of his current problem is to get a bank loan. It's not. He's denied. And and also he is so dumb. Clip 8.
I'm afraid you lack the financial stability that we require.
I own a business. How much more stable can you get?
The truth is, Mr. Silver, you don't have enough assets to qualify for a loan.
What about the club, the equipment?
To borrow a phrase, the electronics, which you're referring to, depreciate the minute they leave the store. And since you don't own the building in which the club resides, you have nothing that can be used as collateral.
What about cars?
Well, cars can be used as collateral if they're worth enough, but it's hard to run a business in this town on public transportation.
It's a classic. It's in perfect condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, then if I were you, I'd try to sell it because you're not going to get a loan from us.
Oh.
Oh, the sad
piano. I know.
Piano.
Come over, loan officer. Keep talking. It's musical. He's just like, what if I open a lemonade stand? And she's like, fucking get out and take your shitty necktie with you. He's such an asshole.
I own a business. I know. I own a business. How much more stable can you get? Well, I'll ask the nut guy and the beer guy. And need we go on? Like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God. At least nut guy has a union. Like, yeah. I kind of want to turn this into a musical, like Damn Yankees, with all these people testifying against David. The nut guy has a number.
Oh, my God.
Am I taking my nuts or not?
Also, if this lady looks familiar to you in this context, it's because she also played a loan officer on The King of Queens. So she's got a lane. She's sticking in it. Good for her.
Yeah, indeed.
So then David comes back to the Peach Pit after dark to a notice of eviction on the door. I love you, Jill Abernathy. You are the best.
So good. He can't even pull the whole thing off. It's so pathetic.
He gets impotently furious and tries to rip off the padlock with his hand. In my notes, I have, really, dude, not your teeth. P.S. You're an idiot. So then Donna goes to collect David for this ball, but he is still in his civvies. She gives him a box and explains that Mrs. G gave her a bonus for finding the bracelet, cufflinks and button covers, I think. And David says she shouldn't have done this. And they have this exchange in clip 9.
I was just trying to look on the brighter side. Forget all about the House of Garibaldi. It's kind of an impulse.
It was a stupid one.
Fuck you.
David.
What are you thinking, Donna? Hey, you've got one client. She's not even who you thought she was. You can't be blowing your money on stuff like this.
Excuse me for trying to be nice. Look, I am trying here.
Why?
You've been really depressed ever since that fight broke out. I guess I was trying to put you in a better mood.
Well, you shouldn't have.
Yeah, obviously. Look, forget about the cufflinks. Apparently, I made a mistake, okay? We'll go to the ball, we'll have a good time. Forget today ever happened, okay?
I gotta handle some other stuff first. I'll meet you up there.
Come on. Can't I wait till tomorrow?
I'll get up there as soon as I can, okay?
Whatever. Just hurry.
So he can be a ton of fun at the ball, not wearing the cufflinks?
Honestly.
Fuck you.
He's so awful. Also, like, maybe you shouldn't be lecturing her about her finances because she's got an allowance. She's fine. Like, your problems are not her problems. Shetty.
Yeah. And if they are, then tell her about them. / marry her and oblige her to bail you out. Oh.
So alone in the kitchen, David crumples his eviction notice, half of it that he pulled off, and paces and ends up at the counter next to Donna's checkbook and forges her signature on a check. What is your end game here, man? Is my question. Like, how do you think this is going to go for you?
Yeah, I mean, what do you think his plan is? To just like do this and then try to pay her back without her knowing because online banking doesn't exist yet? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, wire the money to her, I guess. All he would need for that is like her bank info, which he could get off her check.
Which will show up on her statement, which she probably checks because she's Donna.
Of course. I also wonder why he thinks she has a commercial rent's worth of money in her checking account. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure she has other money like that she could access if she needed to over time. But I don't know why she would like have that big a balance on her like regular checking account that she uses to like buy groceries.
Also, didn't she just pay Nut Guy?
Right.
Last week. So she's out nut fees.
That ain't nothing. Sorry. I honestly, like, I get that he's desperate, but like, this is not a plan and it doesn't make sense. And like, she probably would lend you the money if you just asked her and explained that you're in a situation because you decided to have principles eventually and not pursue a business relationship with the band of bigots.
If you're going into battle, you have to have a war chestnut.
Comprised of cashew.
Mm.
Don't get up. I'll let myself out. Yeah. And the other thing is he doesn't even have the grace to look even a little bit ashamed or guilty. He just like clenches his jaw a bunch of times and clicks his stupid fucking chunky rings together. Like, fuck you. I hate David. I hate him. I hate him a lot.
Yeah. It's not going to get better from here. After a commercial, David has somehow managed to summon Jill Abernathy to the club instead of meeting her wherever she was to give her the rent check. To be courteous, because you fucked up. And Jill is like, who's Donna Martin? Obviously, because at this point, there's no way she should take anything less than a certified check from David.
Seriously?
And honestly,
oh my God,
should not even take that. I mean,
she would be my MVP, but then this happened, so she's not.
Exactly. Yep. He claims that it's a joint account, even though his name isn't printed on the check. And somehow this works. So now, as Sarah said, whatever bad happens to Jill Abernathy, she brought it on herself for not having any sense.
Yeah.
And she warns David to consider this a temporary reprieve. And he has the gall to look pissy about it, as opposed to pathetically grateful that this has worked, which it should not have.
Oh, my God.
So she says if the next month's rent is even one day late, then he's out. He does not thank her. Fill his pants with rocks and throw him in the sea, I say.
Yeah. Or just fill his pants with themselves. That should do it. They're huge.
So it turns out David never makes it to the ball. And when she gets home, Donna is pissed in our last clip.
I'm sorry. I had to work. I have a business to run, remember?
I remember. Seems like it's running your life.
Donna.
You know, we're never on the same schedule anymore. And even when we are, we don't spend any time together.
So what do you want me to do?
Kill yourself.
Sell the club?
No. Of course not.
Then what?
Kill yourself.
What can I do for you?
Why don't you try making me some sort of priority in your life? That is, assuming that I still am.
Kill yourself.
Terrible. Oh,
even the marimba thinks you should kill yourself. Is this actually the attitude? Like, if I gave the writers any credit at all, which no, I would almost admire them for continuing to have him be a complete cunt throughout the scene, because then she won't notice that anything is wrong or different and won't get suspicious that he kited a check.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, he's still being a butt. Must be day ending in Y. Going to bed now. Slam. I have a business to run. Like, uh-huh. How's that going? Because you seemed fine skiving off to Hawaii for like a week to not do that. And now you're going broke and stealing.
Yeah. Hey, who's playing at the club tonight? Oh, right. No one. Because the fucking bailiff bolted the door. My God. Anyway. Terrible. Infuriating. So many details about how things actually work. Not gotten right, except for the loan officer being like, fuck no, get out of my office. Anyway, on that note, let us name our episode MVP. Steve, for being cute. I know it won't last, but he's very cute in this episode.
The loan officer for not thinking David is cute at all. Mm-hmm. Bye, bitch.
Good pick. Least a valuable player. David, a complete idiot.
David, both emotionally and like literally from a fiscal standpoint, not valuable at all. Bye, bitch.
Yeah, to be worse than Kelly and Brandon in their smug public fucking storyline really takes a lot, and you pulled it off. Great job, David, being the worst.
Yeah.
Finally, we have a user submitted challenge. Lynn Warner on Twitter writes, like Garfield minus Garfield improves the comic by omitting him, five ways the episode would be better without Brandon. Well, I wouldn't have had to watch him ruin his parents' dining room and flatware.
If he's not in the episode, Kelly is just writhing around cooing to herself in the elevator and probably gets locked up on a, what is it called? On a, damn it. That's Section 8.
What?
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not
8180. I don't remember. You know what I'm talking. It's a Van Halen album.
Yes. Yeah. A psych hold.
Yes. Involuntary hold.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, he wouldn't, not that it made any difference to Steve, but he wouldn't have been there to lecture Steve about fucking around more on Carly.
Yeah. We wouldn't have had to be in the Beverly Beat office at all, because no editor in chief probably means no issue this week. Boo hoo.
Whoever has to clean the elevator would have certainly been happy for Brandon never to have stepped foot in it. That makes five.
Oh, God. All right. Next time on Again With This, after I get done showering with Lye, Steve maybe has a kid, Noah probably has a huge inheritance, David definitely has a felony-level problem doing a basic budget, and the writers have to stop thinking anyone cares about stupid Erica. Oh, wait. Our visual aids will make you stupid and nauseated when you check them out for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Fed Up Landlady Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Two Patient by Half Loan Officer Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our high maintenance producer is David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.